Before the minister had time to celebrate his victory over this last temptation, he was conscious of another impulse, more ludicrous and almost as horrible. It was to stop short in the road and teach some very wicked words to a knot of little Puritan children who were playing there and who had just begun to talk. Denying himself this freak as unworthy of his cloth, he met a drunken seaman, one of the ship's crew from the Spanish Main. And here, since he had so valiantly forborne all other wickedness, poor Mr. Dimmesdale longed at least to shake hands with the tarry blackguard and recreate himself with a few improper jests, such as dissolute sailors so abound with, and a volley of good, round, solid, satisfactory, and heaven-defying oaths. It was not so much a better principle as partly his natural good taste, and still more his buckramed habit of clerical decorum, that carried him safely through the latter crisis. "What is it that haunts and tempts me thus?" cried the minister to himself, at length pausing in the street and striking his hand against his forehead. "Am I mad? Or am I given over utterly to the fiend? Did I make a contract with him in the forest and sign it with my blood? And does he now summon me to its fulfillment by suggesting the performance of every wickedness which his most foul imagination can conceive?" At the moment when the Reverend Mr. Dimmesdale thus communed with himself and struck his forehead with his hand, old Mistress Hibbins, the reputed witch lady, is said to have been passing by. She made a very grand appearance, having on a high headdress, a rich gown of velvet, and a ruff done up with a famous yellow starch, of which Anne Turner, her especial friend, had taught her the secret before this last good lady had been hanged for Sir Thomas Overbury's murder. Whether the witch had read the minister's thoughts or no, she came to a full stop, looked shrewdly into his face, smiled craftily, and, though little given to converse with clergymen, began a conversation.
"So, Reverend Sir, you have made a visit into the forest," observed the witch lady, nodding her high headdress at him. "The next time, I pray you to allow me only a fair warning, and I shall be proud to bear you company. Without taking over much upon myself, my good word will go far towards gaining any strange gentleman a fair reception from yonder potentate you wot of."
"I profess, madam," answered the clergyman with a grave obeisance, such as the lady's rank demanded and his own good breeding made imperative, "I profess, on my conscience and character, that I am utterly bewildered on touching the purport of your words. I went not into the forest to seek a potentate. Neither do I at any future time design a visit thither with a view to gaining the favour of such a personage. My one sufficient object was to greet that pious friend of mine, the Apostle Eliot, and rejoice with him over the many precious souls he hath won from heathendom." cackled the old witch lady, still nodding her high headdress at the minister.
"Well, well, we must needs talk thus in the daytime. You carry it off like an old hand, but at midnight and in the forest we shall have other talk together.